Welcome back to another episode of the Shine Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Starr. We get to talk about all things business, personal growth, and everything in between. I have a lovely guest on the show today, and you get to listen to our conversation that we had around franchise businesses, what it takes to own one, what it means, what they are, what they're not, and how women are kind of killing it at the franchise business. And today I had the opportunity to chat with Jane Stein, who is a certified franchise consultant and the founder and president of Your Franchise Is Waiting. She gives you tons of tips and even some PDF and guides. This amazing woman was previously employed with a large Wall Street firm and was a certified financial planner for more than 2 decades. I'm so excited about this conversation, so let's jump right in. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jane. We're going to jump right into talking about all about franchises and what we need to know. But first, I actually would love to know how you got started building wealth with franchise businesses and how that journey went from working at a Wall Street firm to now here and growing.
Great. So thanks for having me on your show, Shauna. It's an interesting story. I feel like I've told it so much, but hopefully you'll think it's interesting. I was one of those people, and I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I had a very successful career. I was in the top quartile, certainly nationwide at this firm, had a huge team, managed $300 million in assets. And it was about 20 years in, and I was miserable. I would wake up in the morning and lay there in bed and go, oh, is it a weekend? And then the realization that it was a weekday, and I would just have this sinking. My soul was sinking. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it. It just didn't feel like it fit me anymore. I wasn't learning anymore. I was very stagnant. I'm the kind of person, if you know anything about Enneagrams, I'm a 7. I need little change in venue from time to time. And it had gotten very, very stale. So the long and short of it was after 9/11, I just had an awakening that life is very short. Mm. Why am I spending it in a career that no longer is who I am? And I didn't know what the next step was. I just realized I don't want to live in Houston, Texas anymore. These aren't my people. I don't know how to describe it. I convinced my husband we needed to move to Colorado, where we had previously been spending a lot of time, and we're outdoor people. And I wanted my boys to have an outdoor life. We had 2 little boys at the time. They were 4 and 6. And I felt like I wanted them to grow up being able to wander around outdoors unencumbered. I wanted them to explore in the woods. I wanted them to be able to learn to ski and love hiking the way we do. Mm-hmm. So we picked up and moved to Boulder, Colorado. And literally, I just sort of picked it on a map because I thought, okay, they have good public schools, because I knew we were going to be, quote, retiring at very young ages. I was 47, Mike was 55. And we didn't have a plan other than we weren't going to do that anymore. But, you know, worst comes to worst, we had enough to not work again, assuming we didn't belong to country clubs and have nannies and do all those things that have been part of our lifestyle. So we moved. I was very involved in my kids' classes. I have my younger son is on the spectrum, and I wanted to be in the classroom and be more involved. And that's what I did until they hit middle school and high school. My oldest was actually going off to college, and I was like, well, okay, what now? Mm-hmm. Because I had been doing very meaningful volunteer work, but I missed business. Mm-hmm. I love business. And what I thought is that when you buy a franchise, you invest your money and they run it for you. That's how clueless I was. So I start clicking around on the internet on these different franchise sites, not realizing those are lead portals for franchise brokers, franchise consultants, which is what I ended up doing. So anyway, I start getting all these cold calls by these, I don't know, I like to call them old white men in their basements. I mean, it was really not a great, like, consultative experience of consulting. It was more like used car sales. And the light bulbs just started going off about, okay, here's a thing I could do that I could, you know, not a lot of people are doing well based on the four or five people that called me. It pulls together all the things I did love about my business, which is helping people, which is researching, which is putting together the pieces of the puzzle. You know, the funnest thing about that business was Mr. Jones, Mrs. Jones wanted to accomplish X, Y, Z. I'd put it in a spreadsheet, figure out where they needed to be based on where we are today and what the return needed to be, and then plug in the portfolio pieces to solve that. And that's literally what I do now. Somebody tells me, I've got X amount of dollars I'm willing to risk. I want a lifestyle that is not, I don't want to work weekends or nights. I want, you know, I have a series of assessments that I go through where we have these meaningful conversations about what do you want your life to look like? That's the part I like, the meaningful engagement, then the problem solving, then the research, and then ultimately, if it works, changing someone's life for the better, helping someone else achieve their lifelong dream of entrepreneurship. So anyway, that's the long story. I swear my other answers will be super short. But
no, that's beautiful. I wanted to get to know that because as I was reading about you and getting to know you that way, just, you know, by online and figuring it out, it was such a different jump that I wanted to hear all that. So thank you for sharing. And I didn't get to experience just that, but when I worked in offices, I moved around the country a few times. And so when I landed in Florida, my business wasn't thriving right away. You know, you have to grow it. And it is hard to explain because I liked the people I was working with. I didn't mind the work, but there was just something every day that as the days went by, I got less and less me because I knew I wasn't meant to be there. So I totally understand that. Mine's not the mountains, mine's the beach instead, but you know, it's that healing outdoors, just like you talked about as well. So totally
100%. Yeah.
So now for the people listening that might not know and have maybe a grasp on franchise, will you just tell us like the basic, what is and what is not a franchise?
Sure. It's such an interesting category of business ownership. So when a business wants to grow their footprint, right, they could either get a lot of money together and grow their footprint organically and open offices in 20 different states. Mm-hmm. Often, however, they don't have the million or 2 million required to do so. And instead, they decide to grow their business through the franchise model. And the way it works is they have a successful business. They decide that it can be recreated by anybody. They put together their operations manuals and make it very, very e-myth, if you know what I mean. They decide to sell the rights to open their business in another city elsewhere. And you as the investor are buying the rights to own that particular trademarked business, the name, the systems, the operations manual, the trademark, everything that they have to offer, their marketing packages. You buy the right to open that business in your town, essentially. Mm-hmm. I'm going to simplify this because not every single franchise is what we call territory-based, but most are. And that's the way the traditional model works. Mm-hmm. For that right, you're going to pay three different kinds of fees. Typically, you're going to pay a franchise fee up front. That's a check you write when you sign your agreement, and you will sign a contract to be partners with them. Typically, it's a 10-year contract. You're going to pay them royalties, which is a percentage of your gross sales. And typically, you're going to contribute to a marketing fund, which is a pool of money that benefits sort of everybody in the system. So that is technically the definition, briefly, of what a franchise is.
That's perfect. I love that. And what I know, this is going to be such a broad question, and it's going to depend on the person and what they're looking for in a franchise. But what are some qualities that would make it a good opportunity or a good franchise to look into if you're first starting to look for that first one?
Well, I guess I would say if you, first of all, 100% depends on your capital. So a good advisor will walk you through that, because just because you can qualify for a $500,000 loan doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. You know, my rule of thumb is, what's your net worth? What's your liquid capital? Certainly, I would never want anybody to invest in a business that's more than 50% of their net worth, total investment. But so there's that. There's also is it in your wheelhouse? What are your strengths? Do you like to go out and network? Do you like to go out and, you know, call on other business owners? Are you an introvert? Are you somebody who's really good at systems and processes, but not really a people person? These are all the kinds of things. So budget, what's in your wheelhouse? What does your market look like? Is it affluent? Is it poor? I mean, you know, and I have clients from Yuma, Arizona to Boca Raton and everything in between. So, you know, you really have to understand your market. You have to understand your financing capabilities. You have to understand what it is you'll be doing on a daily basis. And does that fit into your wheelhouse? Mm-hmm. In terms of business attributes, you know, what I think is a good thing to look at isn't necessarily what you think might be.
Right.
Like, I like a business that's recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. But that kind of business, by definition, isn't going to ramp up very quickly, because it's a membership model, or it's a whatever, that, you know, the dollar of the transaction is typically lower. So maybe it takes a year, senior care, whatever, all kinds of things. Maybe it takes a year to really ramp up and start being able to pull money out of the business, mm-hmm. versus a transactional business where the ticket is high, like say house painting, mm-hmm. where, you know, or kitchen remodeling, or, you know, these are 10,000 and up individual transactions. You get out there, you have a blind business, you're cash flowing in 30 days. Mm-hmm. You have no employees. It's you. You have no real costs. You're not in a brick and mortar location. You're selling a service and product that averages over $5,000. You know, you're making money month one. So it kind of just depends on what that person wants, needs in terms of their financial runway. Sometimes it's interesting. I like to tell people, sometimes your first business isn't one necessarily that is what you had in mind, but it's what will work for you, mm-hmm. now. Think of it as a starter home.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't have the financial runway to go a year and a half without making money. You don't have the financial runway for a $600,000 brick and mortar, whatever it is, but you do have the capital to start this little business and sell it in 5 years, mm-hmm. you know, build it, grow it, learn it, and sell it. And now you'll be a better business owner.
Yes.
But I would say, back to your question of what should you be looking for, you should be looking for solid support, solid systems. If you're a first-time business owner, that's the number one thing I'll coach you to research.
Yeah. And I really like what you said about that as well, because no matter what business, I feel like it can shift. You're not stuck with that business. You're not stuck with that model. Things can shift. So that's just so important to keep. And personally as well, I feel like after we find something, we feel like we have to stick to it. And that's just not the case. It might be that building block you need in order to get to that next point. So that was,
yeah, mm-hmm. for what sure. And people like to buy franchises, by the way. They command a higher multiple, so they're pretty easy to sell. And a lot of times the parent company will help you sell it.
Oh, very interesting. What are, and I know you touched on this just a little bit ago, but what are maybe
how can we hone in on some of our strengths in business personally to choose then a good route for us? And maybe a better way is to say that is, how can we work on ourselves to build some strengths for a franchise business?
Well, I think all businesses involve, you know, the following, and you can tell me about this for your business. You know, you have to have your head in the game as far as sales. Mm. Now, that may not be going out and cold calling and trying to get, you know, like I know you have done a little bit of that, and I have to do that from time to time too. It may not be that, but every business you are selling your services, your product, your why is your massage better than massage down the street? You know, so there's some element of sales. There's some element of understanding the balance sheet, understanding a profit and loss statement. You know, what's good about a franchise, by the way, is you don't actually have to be good at any of these things. The franchise world is made for first-time business owners. Mm-hmm. They have coaches who show you how to track your KPIs, if you know what that is. They show you how to read your profit and loss statements. You will learn so much in mm-hmm. a well-supported franchise system that you can then go out and do your own thing. You don't even need a franchise the next time around. Mm. But so the good news about a franchise system is you don't really have to prep or know what you're doing in any particular field. In fact, they don't want experts in that field. Obviously, they don't. If it's a painting, if it's CertaPro, they don't want house painters, right? They want, so I would say, you know, the ability to lead a team is really useful if you're going to have employees. The ability to understand your way around a spreadsheet and a balance sheet and a profit and loss statement. Some aspect of schmoozing is required in certain businesses. Yes. Yeah. Schmoozing ability is good. Really, I will tell you, Shauna, there's only one thing you need to have to be successful, in my opinion. And that is, you know, grit, gumption, whatever you want to call it. If you are one of those people who is all in, and once you make the decision, you're going to make it work no matter what, that's just your personality, you're likely, very likely to be successful in whatever the business is. So if you have grit, if you have gumption, if you have the ability to feel the fear, understand this is a risk. Oh my God, I'm writing a check for $50,000, but go forward anyway, in spite of that, because you know there's a piece of you inside that's like, I got this, I'm going to do this. That's really the number one thing that will drive your success. And it's really what I found over and over again. Mm-hmm. People who are too analytical, they're looking for all the reasons it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. They're very, very skeptical. You know, I just find that those aren't the qualities that make a successful business owner. Mm. I heard something recently. I'm going to try and find the note of exactly the wording, but the bottom line of it was, owning a business is having the ability to make decisions every single day based on imperfect data, right? Don't you have to make decisions every day? Do you know for sure it's going to be a good decision? Heck no.
No.
We just make these gut decisions because it's time and I have to change my CRM and this one should be good and I'm just going to make it work. I mean, you can't analyze things to death. You'll die in a business.
I wrote down immediately when you said grit and what that takes, because I, you know, flash back to some decisions that I've had to make. And if that was true in my case too, and just running it through my filters that way. And what I loved about it is, you know, that grit or whatever you want to call it, is what leads to creativeness, because you have to keep going and you have to find different ways that work and different ways that work for you, because my strengths might not be their strengths. And so we can still both do business, but it's going to look vastly different how we conduct that business. And so I love what you said, what you need is grit, because that really brings out the creativeness, even in a very analytical business, because I think that's what continues it to grow too. Like you said, is it doesn't, you can't analyze everything to death, because there's always going to be a percent that it's not going to work, and then you're not going to do it. So I love that.
And you know, willingness to delegate, I think, is important. I mean, I know people that just won't scale and grow because they can't get themselves out of the day to day. Gotta be willing to delegate. You know, lots of things like that. Self-awareness, right? If you know and are willing to acknowledge that sales is not your bailiwick, hire a crack salesperson. Yeah. If you know that you're not the best at the money piece and the finance piece and the budgeting piece, hire a good person to do mm-hmm. that for you, controller, bookkeeper, whatever. So yeah, self-awareness I think is key. And
yeah, I totally agree. I kind of wanted to go into maybe like a misconception, because even though I feel like I know a lot about business, franchise is a completely different thing that I could really learn about. So I think maybe one misconception even I had before this conversation would be how much the investment would be, and what are some ways to actually finance a franchise or to find to fit a budget?
Gotcha. So first of all, financing is interesting because people have a belief that they have excellent credit, they have a wonderful relationship with their banker, they're going to be able to go in and get a commercial loan for their franchise. Mm. Franchises are startups. Very few banks, traditional neighborhood lending banks that you might have a great relationship with, are willing to loan you money for a startup. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the federal government, understanding how important franchising is to the overall economy and GDP, and I have all kinds of statistics about that, like how significant it is, has rolled that into the umbrella of the SBA guaranteed loan program. So the traditional way that somebody will finance a franchise is to go and get an SBA loan, which sounds fantastic, but I'm here to tell you with my money hat on, SBA loans are relatively high interest loans right now, because interest rates are high. And so they're not the absolute best, but it's your only option if you're needing to borrow other people's money. So the traditional way is you go get an SBA loan, which requires that you have a 20% capital infusion. So if you're borrowing $500,000, you need to have $100,000 liquid sitting there to show them. They want to see that you are willing to put in your skin in the game. In addition, you need to show that you have post-loan liquidity of enough money to run that business for X amount of months. Each bank is different. Or a secondary stream of income coming in, like a spouse's job. Mm-hmm. So SBA loans are the traditional way. But lately, I've been having clients take a look at, depending on how much they need, just taking out a little HELOC, a home equity loan, because you can, there's a lot of businesses where the total investment is under $150,000. Why go to the trouble and expense of an SBA loan if you've got $400,000 in home equity? Mm. Home equity lines are cheap. You don't have to pay for much more than an appraisal fee. You can pay back interest only for a while, and the interest rates are decent. And they too float with interest rates, and interest rates are peaking now. So hopefully all of these rates will be lower 2 years from now, but it's been a struggle with SBA loans. Mm. In terms of cost, I mean, you have to have some liquidity. You first of all, you have to write a check for the franchise fee. So let's say that's $30,000. You then should likely have enough liquidity to just have working capital for the first few months. So that's another $30,000. So my rule of thumb is, really, I don't think you should start looking at franchises until you have $75,000 just sitting there in cash, not in a 401k, not in stocks that may be down at any given time, but just sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the investment, oh my gosh, some franchises, the total investment might only be $60,000, $70,000, home staging, right? Because you don't need a brick and mortar, there's no equipment, there's no employees to start with, blah, blah, blah. And then there's all the way up to millions of dollars for a, you know, an urban air or some sort of an entertainment park. Hmm. So franchising is just so varied, which is why it's so interesting to me, because there's a franchise for every possible weird service or product. I'm not kidding, from crime cleanup to recruiting and staffing to, you know, a winery to cryotherapy to salt caves to estate sales to, you know, school fundraising. You could be a franchise broker, you know, there's bridal rooms, escape rooms, dog training, so many different things. And if it's not a brick and mortar business where you don't have a big main street location, that's where the expenses is building out, you know, a nice space. Mm. So if there are so many businesses, or you don't need that, you'll operate out of your home initially, or you'll operate out of an executive suite for $500 a month.
You already answered one of my other questions, because I was curious for myself and thought it would be a great question to know, like, is there a number that you suggest having in cash, like you said, and you said it, and I was like, okay, good to know. I immediately wrote it down, because that I had no clue. You could have said $5,000. You could have said $150,000. I had no idea. So that's interesting that you suggest about 75 to start when you're, you know, first looking.
And that's my rule of thumb, because I'm super conservative. There's franchises out there that are only $10,000, like American Express Travel, mm. you know. But if you want to really have a variety of things to look at, yep, $75,000 liquid and about $200,000 in total net worth. Don't forget, this is an investment and the Federal Trade Commission views it as such. Mm-hmm. And so the sale of franchises is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. So each franchise has to have some sort of a minimum net worth requirement in their documents that they're looking for. And so you should have some net worth. You should have $75,000 in liquidity. And then I've got a bigger variety of things I can show you.
Of course. Yes, I totally believe that. You've talked often about the due diligence process to find the opportunity. Would you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting, because it is the sale of franchises itself is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. So there are certain things. Anyone who is incentivized by you buying this business is not allowed to say, which is good. And there is a 200 plus page document that they are required to disclose to you pretty early on in the process, called the Franchise Disclosure Document. Mm-hmm. And they're standardized. They all cover the same 23 items. For example, if they've ever had a lawsuit, they're required to disclose it.
Mm.
They are required to disclose the name and contact information of every single owner in that system. Pretty great, right?
Mm.
You can call them. They are required to disclose the contact information of anybody who owned that franchise but left, either shut down or sold or whatever, failed in the last 3 years.
Wow.
You can call them too. So there is a huge amount of information that gets disclosed. What doesn't get disclosed is the number one thing you have to figure out, which is how much money you're going to make.
Yes, yes.
And the reason is, in every franchise, there's people that are highly successful, making a ton of money. And there's people in the bottom 20% that are struggling, probably shouldn't have bought it to begin with, and everything in between. So that's one of the reasons. There's no way to tell you how you're going to do. They don't really know. And, you know, so it's a really fascinating 3-month discovery process where we start with an initial phone call with the franchisor. They will give you a little bit of information about their business model. Then the next phone call will be a 1-hour webinar. Typically, this is a typical due diligence process. And I have a great ebook on this. Well, I don't know if it's great. I wrote it, but it's short and sweet and summarizes, and I'm happy to offer your readers. It's on my website, which is called Your Franchise is Waiting. And they can find me on LinkedIn, again, Jane Stein, if they want to just reach out and ask for it. But there are links all over my website for it too. Anyway,
perfect.
That second phone call is a webinar typically where they really dive into the business model in more detail, a little bit of their secret sauce. It's fascinating to me. They don't have you sign an NDA. So they kind of go through, well, that's because they don't go into like huge detail. It's an hour webinar, but they go into some detail about, you know, what it is that, you know, makes their business special. Typically, then there's a third webinar. This is week 3, where they go into a little bit about the unit economics. And in this webinar, oftentimes they do walk through, okay, here's our average ticket price. Here's our monthly membership. This is our average across the system of how many members you need to break even. This is how that looks. They might have, they'll show their, there's a section in their disclosure document called item 19, where they do disclose usually gross sales revenue, the top third, middle third, bottom third, and they kind of walk through how many memberships you need or whatever and how that would look. So that's called unit economics. And then at that point, you are entering what's called validation. And validation means you're going to be speaking to franchise owners to ask the hard questions, because while the franchise sales guy can't tell you how much money you're going to make, when you're in a validation call with an owner of that business in Atlanta, as an example, that have been in business 2 years or whatever, they are allowed to tell you how much money they made year one, what their gross sales were, their EBITDA, whatever they're willing to disclose. And surprisingly, they are willing to disclose a lot of information.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, if they'd be even willing to do that. But that's interesting.
Because they appreciate it, because they did it when they invested. And they know that you're relying on actual numbers to try and build out your pro forma and figure out how much money you need to borrow and really understand if you want to do this or not. Yeah. So they're surprisingly candid.
Okay.
Then, you know, and then ultimately the next phase after you've talked to 7 or 8 owners is to get flown to corporate office, or sometimes they don't pay for it, sometimes you pay for it, and you do something called meet the team, and they will not typically approve you until they've met you in person. And what's interesting is that's the first time you've ever met the corporate team.
Wow.
Because prior to that, you've been engaging with the franchise development team, who may not even be corporate employees. That could be outsourced. Usually it is. So meet the team day is a super important time to spend a day or two with a leadership team, eyeball to eyeball. Do you trust them? You're going to be married to them for 10 years. You are.
Yes.
And then you may renew for another 10. So, you know, is this somebody you want to be in business with? So really important. Sometimes people don't get approved at Discovery Day, at Meet the Team Day.
And after
I've had it happen more than once.
Wow. Yeah, that would be really discouraging after going through all that other process like you talked about. That's huge. What are, and I know you kind of touched on this and we talked about grit, but when you meet people, because I'm sure you meet tons of people getting in the places and spaces that you've been in, and you get to first talk to somebody, are there qualities that you maybe not search out, but notice in somebody that you think that would be a wonderful franchise owner? And I know you said there's a franchise for everybody, so that might be another broad question, but I just know sometimes things click and you see something in somebody and you go, you'd make a great franchise owner. Is there any of those qualities that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all the things that we've kind of talked about. It's like, do they have, are they a clear communicator? Do they have a clear understanding of what they want their life to look like? They may not have a clear understanding of what kind of business they want, but oftentimes they do. Mm-hmm. They already are pretty all in early on. And there will be language like, I've always wanted to own my own business and now's the time.
Yes.
I'm turning 50. Mm-hmm. I'm turning 60. These are the two. I've always wanted to do this. If they've been in sales, it's a slam dunk because there are so many businesses that require some sort of sales aptitude, mm-hmm. even though you're not going to be out there cold calling. You know what I'm saying? Right. Mm-hmm. If they have led teams, very, very useful. Mm-hmm. If they have been in logistics, believe it or not, you know who the number one career that every franchise just about is looking for? Medical device sales.
Wow. Okay.
It's big numbers. They're great communicators. They're getting out there. They just have an extremely strong sales background. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying that because there are so many businesses, to me, the most high income businesses are businesses that are going to require some sales ability,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, things like staffing and recruiting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say that. I would say, somebody who's willing to follow a system who doesn't work in the franchise world is somebody who really is constantly second guessing why it has to be done this way. Wouldn't it be a better way mm-hmm. to do it this way? Why do they do their marketing this way? Why aren't they doing it this way?
Yeah.
Right. Franchises are made for rule followers to some extent, somebody who values and appreciates this organization has spent a lot of money and a lot of time developing over time what works. I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I'm willing to pay money for your wheel. Give me your wheel.
Love that.
Show me what you've learned about how to be successful. And I just want to execute. So that's a certain kind of person. Somebody who's like super entrepreneurial, not so much going to be happy. That's right. Why most franchises offer discounts to military.
Really?
Because they understand processes,
yes,
and they know how to follow them.
Yes, absolutely. You're right.
It's become kind of a joke, but if you ask, because I always have my client, when you're talking to the franchisor, ask them, what is the number one reason that one would fail in this business? What's the number one reason for failure? And it's such a joke. I'm not even going to have anyone say it anymore, because the answer is always, and you know, I think this is just a pat answer and not necessarily true, but the answer is always failure to follow our system. Inability to follow our system. They wanted to do it their way. They didn't pick up the calls when our coaches called on a weekly basis. They refused to participate in the coaching. They refused to participate in the group calls. They wanted to do it their way. Don't buy it. Why are you paying all this money? That's not, you're not going to.
Right. You're not getting out of it. Yes, absolutely. You're not getting what you are paying for, really, then. Right. And the reason I wanted to ask that is I know a lot of the listeners for the Shine podcast are women. And so even though you can say you'd be a good fit for this, this is the money you need, and they might know, yep, I checked it all off. I have all of those things. But still, I know a lot of people tend to second guess or question if they have that ability. And so I wanted to know just some qualities, like you've stated, to let them go, oh, yep, I am made for that. So your answer was perfect. I loved it.
So women are the fastest growing segment in franchise ownership. In fact, somewhere I have a statistic about how fast it's grown. Female ownership in franchising grew 83% between 2012 and 2018.
That's incredible.
Women are really, I have another ebook called The Girlfriend's Guide to Franchising. Okay, and perfect. It's about why women are really made for the franchise model. Hmm. And one is, and huge generalization, obviously, but we are willing to have mentors.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women seek out mentors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't feel the need to like, me, I did it my way. You know, we want to know how we can be best doing this particular marketing program and how that, so we seek out mentors. We tend to be, again, huge generalization, more emotionally intelligent leaders, more compassionate employers. Mm. So anyway, lots of other reasons too. And they're all in my ebook. I'd love to Perfect. Send you a copy.
That one I'm going to go get. So I'm going to put Good. All go these links it. In the notes, by the way, because so, if they're listening in the car and they can't click everything and I want them for myself, so they'll be in the bio too.
All right. When we hang up, I will email you actual links to all Perfect. Of those.
Okay. Perfect. That would be amazing. Is there any misconceptions that you hear often about ownership that you'd like to debunk or talk more in depth? Just a little bit of those for me.
Yeah, I mean, the notion that they're going to run it for you. I mean, I think there's a belief that corporate does more than you think.
Hmm.
Corporate is there to support you and to try and help you be successful, but you own this business.
Mm-hmm.
This is your business. It's your business to grow. It's your business to sell. It's your business to, it's your money. You don't have to do what corporate says, mm-hmm. right? Lots of people, we've talked about that. So I think the notion that somehow the corporate office is going to really kind of just run everything for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's number one. I think number two is that when people think franchise, they always think food.
Hmm.
And so few of my clients have ever invested in a restaurant, QSR or otherwise, because if you ever dive into the unit economics of a restaurant, you are looking typically at single digit margins.
Wow.
Not always.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you make money in food, and there's many millionaires that have been afforded their financial status through owning restaurants,
yeah.
but it's because they scaled to own 10 or more.
Right.
Food is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. It's extremely competitive. The costs versus the revenue, the margins aren't great. The labor pool is problematic, especially now. So I would say, open your eyes to the other possibilities. I can show you fantastic service businesses with 20 to 30% margins that are a lot easier. Just so many easier ways to make money than a restaurant. That's pretty much about the hardest thing there is.
That's so interesting you say that, because I was thinking about franchise owners I knew about as a child, which were mostly restaurants, and it would usually be men who had 20 or 30 of them. Oh, they own this Subway and 85 other restaurants in the town. But now, being in Panama City Beach and meeting the incredible, mostly like women that I've been connecting with, there's one woman in particular who hers is a eyelash like bar, and it's a franchise. Yep. And she opened one, it did great. So then a few hours away, but still close enough where she could watch over, there's another. And I think she just opened her third. And so actually, when I think of franchise, I think of a lot of women that are starting to open not restaurants and food, because like you said, that it's such a tough business. So that's incredible.
Yep. Yeah, I love the lash business. I love waxing. I love lashes, because guess what? It looks horrible if you don't do it two weeks later.
Yes, it does.
That's why I haven't done it. I'm like, I refuse to go down that road. That's one more thing I have to go every 2.5 weeks for. No.
And you're also right about that sales, because this woman in particular is outgoing and kind and sweet, and she can schmooze like we talked about. But that's just because she's social. And so she's constantly selling by just being. And so she's a great salesperson.
I mean, even if it's a B2C business like that, where the bulk of your business is going to be driven by digital advertising, right? It's not like you have to go to chamber meetings or anything. However, you're the face of the business in your community. And so you want to be, if you're outgoing, I mean, there's so many things you can do to drive business. You can partner with the blow dry bars, you can partner with the spas and have your cards there. I mean, just going out and traveling in those circles is a great way to build your business. I like the lash business. And that's a typical way that people scale and grow in a brick and mortar. To scale and grow in a service-based business is very different. So brick and mortar, so let's talk lashes. So, you know, each one, maybe you're spending a total of $250,000 in that build out. So each time you're going to hit capacity, right? So now you have to open a new location. Mm-hmm. So that's what she's doing. And then she's going to hit capacity there. And then she's going to have to open another location. So that's the traditional. And what's good about those businesses that are brick and mortar like that is they can be somewhat semi-absentee, what we call semi-absentee. She doesn't have to be in those stores.
Right.
But another option is a service business. Let's talk about, kitchen remodeling or closets. Let's talk closets. Closets, you can drive literally a $20 million gross revenue business out of one factory, one location, one showroom. Hmm. As your business grows, you're simply adding on trucks, technicians, salespeople. Mm-hmm. So you're adding to those variable expenses as your revenue grows. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to put in another $500,000 for your second restaurant. You simply add to your people and to your transportation, your trucks, basically. Right. I call it scale by techs and trucks and salespeople.
Yes, yes. And that's not even one, like I said, because I'm still learning about them as well. I guess I only think of brick and mortar and not the like service-based ones that you said. So that's so interesting to hear. I like that.
Window coverings. You can drive a huge amount of business out of one location. Property management. You can drive a $5 million business with one tiny little office with 5 employees.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so I want to give you some credit because it's due here. Is as I was reading about you, something I read was that none of your clients have failed. And that is such a huge accomplishment. And I just wanted to give props to you because that's incredible. So I know that didn't come with the question, but I just wanted to say I read that and wanted to present that on this podcast because
thank you.
That's wonderful.
Thank you so much.
I just have two more questions for you. And the first one is there anything that's been on your heart, whether it's in business or personal, something you read from a book that you would just love to share with those listening today?
I knew you were going to ask me this, and what came to mind, because I had just previously listened to your podcast on assumptions, and I have a great story that is a true story that is not my story. Someone told it to me. I was at a meditation retreat, and the leader is a female Buddhist, whatever's right below monk. I forgot. Okay. They have a name. She's at the front. She's telling a great story about that morning. She was rushing to get to the venue so she could lead this retreat. Mm-hmm. And she lived up in the mountains in Boulder, and there's only one way down. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the road was under construction. And so it was one of those scenarios where you backed up until your light turned green, and then you could go down the next, you know, whatever, 20 yards. Or when the light was red, you had to wait, and the people coming up the mountain came mm-hmm. through. So she is traipsing down the mountain, following a car in front of her. And all she sees in the car in front of her is this long, beautiful, silky gray hair flinging out the window. your view, your listeners can't see my image, but I'm flicking my hair out the window.
Flick, yes.
And she sees this, and she's annoyed because the woman is not going the, you know, she doesn't feel that she feels she's distracted and not paying attention, and that it's causing her to almost be late. She's not going maybe fast enough. She's just not paying attention. Mm-hmm. And when she and so she's simmering at this egoic woman who's just so busy flicking her hair in the breeze. And she gets down to the bottom of the mountain, and the car turns left. And what she sees is that it's a dog in the back seat. It's an Afghan. It's an Afghan with those long hair flowing. And she just burst out laughing because she just had built up this whole case.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I love that story because we do that. We build up a whole case. And then, I mean, how many times when you're like, oh, I had all of these assumptions, and it was completely not the case.
Absolutely.
I thought they were avoiding me because blah, blah, blah. They decided not to invest in a franchise, and they're, you know, not returning calls and blah, blah, blah. And it turns out they were on vacation.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Well, I'm glad it was actually a happy thing. I was worried it was not going to be. So I'm so glad it was just a dog, but it's so true. I am one of the worst for that, because just with past experiences, we take that into new experiences, and I build stories and cases of why such and such happened. And it's so important to remember that that might not be the case. Might not be
100%.
So the last thing is, how can we find you, follow you, and get all of the resources? Of course, those links will be in the bio, but how can we find you?
Cool. So I have a Facebook page under the business name, Your Franchise is Waiting. I have a LinkedIn page under Your Franchise is Waiting, and also under my name. You know, website, Twitter, all the usual suspects. Jane Stein, Your Franchise is Waiting. And I think if you just Google Jane Stein Franchise Broker or Franchise mm-hmm. Consultant, I think I pop right up.
Oh, you are the first one. I did my Google research. So,
oh, yes. Nice.
Yes. Well, perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot too, because as I was coming up with questions, I'm like, what can I learn through this? So that was incredible. I really appreciate it, and all of your wisdom too.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Shauna.
Of course.
I really could go on and on about Jane and how lovely she is, and about all the information that I learned as well. So I hope you got something fantastic out of it and feel good about learning about franchise businesses. Before I let you go, I know that I said all the links would be in the bio, and I'm keeping my word. Click the links in the bio if you want to get all of her guides. But you can also just head to yourfranchiseiswaiting.com and search around on their fabulous website to find everything you need. Do you have a way that you are streamlined with your clients, sending invoices, proposals, getting paid, organizing, having a calendar, and if you also have a podcast, you can set up a separate account just so that you can set up calendars and reminders for those podcast interviews? If you do not have a system like this in place, please try out HoneyBook. I have had it for 2 years. I use it for everything in my business to keep in contact, to keep organized, and to keep everything in that one place. Right now, you can get 35% off when you use HoneyBook. So go to share.honeybook.com/ShaunaStar. That's S-H-A-N-N-A-S-T-A-R to get started now and get 35% off.